Hey, and just a quick reminder that the audio-only versions of these Vital MX interviews are available on the Vital MX podcast page. Search for it anywhere you get your pods and let your friends know about it. Hey guys, it's Jamie from Vital MX, and today I've got amateur sensation Casey Cochran on the phone. What's going on, Casey?
What's up? Glad to be on here.
Yeah, man. I think I finally met you at Freestone a few months ago and saw you again at some of the Supercross Future rounds. And yeah, glad to finally get a chance to talk to you.
Yeah, me too. Glad we got to sit down and do this.
Yeah, so let's do a little bit of background. I know they did a like a family video on you guys at one of the Supercross rounds and talked about your parents a little bit, but you grew up in Virginia with a couple military Navy parents, correct?
Yeah, I did. So I was born just outside of Virginia Beach, and both my parents were in the Navy, actually. And I actually didn't spend much time there. I only lived there for about a year. So we moved out when I was one. And then I actually mostly grew up in Tennessee, lived there until I was about eight, and then Georgia and Florida since then.
Okay. So. Were your parents in the military still when you were born? How long were they, if they were, how long before they retired?
I know my mom was still in the military. I'm not entirely sure with my dad. I know he was still in it. I don't know if he was on active duty or not, but yeah. I know they were both still in the military.
Okay. Yeah, I grew up a Navy brat, so I was curious how much of it you dealt with. But yeah, your dad was a fighter pilot. Your mom was a mechanic on an aircraft carrier. Pretty cool jobs.
Yeah, for sure. It's a cool backstory for sure.
But moving on, your dad raced a little bit, and I assume that's how you got into it. He must have been racing when you were growing up, and you just kind of wanted to do it too?
Yeah, so actually my dad used to race cars a little bit back in the day. I don't know if that was I don't remember. I might have been born around then. I'm not even sure. But he stopped doing that pretty early. And then my grandpa, he actually owns a motorcycle dealership. So he got me, and he used to race. He raced road racing for quite a while. And so he got me a CRF50 for my like second Christmas or third Christmas or something. Mm-hmm. And ever since then, I've been on a dirt bike, basically.
So, yeah, this is a very familiar story. My dad raced dirt track cars, so I grew up around that a little bit. Yes, kind of seems very familiar. But how quickly did it become addicting to you, and how quickly, like at what point did your family realize, oh, Casey's got some talent?
So it was probably, we did a lot of local racing around, maybe just every weekend or two. There was a few little local series in Tennessee when I was probably 5 years old, and then on my 6 year old year on 50s, I was still in school, obviously, and the whole summer we went to train with Zach Mashburn, and we spent the whole summer just training for Loretta's, basically. And then I went to Loretta's that year, and I won on a 50, and then ever since that day, it's been pretty serious.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Growing up, like, who were your idols? Being a Tennessee kid, tell me it wasn't Alex Ray.
No, I don't think it was.
Okay. Okay. Who were your idols?
I used to really love Villopoto back in the day, the 2011 to the 2013 era, right in there. When he won those titles on the 450, I always looked up to him a lot. But it's more recently changed just to Kenny, I guess. Looking up to Kenny, and I love his whole vibe he's got going on, and everything he's overcome. It's a cool story. So nowadays it's him, but I would say back in the day it was Villopoto.
Okay, Kenny's a good one, man. I just recently got to where I'm actually friendly with Kenny a little bit. Like, it took a long time for him to break down that bridge. He was a little bit standoffish, and man, he is a cool dude. We have a lot of music interest in common.
Yeah, for sure. It's cool now, even being able to, you know, hang out, and we go on the boat sometimes, go wake surfing sometimes, so it's cool to be able to hang out with someone you look up to pretty frequently.
That is cool. Like, do you still get a little bit nervous, or is it normal now?
You know, maybe for about the first year, it was a little nerve-wracking, but now it's just a normal guy.
Yeah, because you're going to have to deal with that in a couple of years when you start lining up at the pro level. There's going to be guys still in the class that you're like, wow, man, like that's so-and-so or, you know, whatever. And you got to kind of get over the fact that these guys are heroes, quote-unquote, and they're just people.
For sure, for sure.
So you win your first Loretta's title and it starts getting serious. When do you start getting support from outside sponsors?
So it was that year that I won Loretta's, actually. We did the Oak Hill National before Loretta's that year. And I won that, and I was wearing, I think I was just wearing some random Answer gear. And after that, actually Answer called us, and I got a deal with them to get just some free gear. And so that was the first deal. That was before Loretta's even that year. So that's when the first little support started coming in.
Does that not feel super cool? The first time you get some free stuff, it's like, oh wow, I've made it.
For sure. Like I remember there was some Answer gear that I, it was the Skull Candy gear that they came out with back then. And I wanted that gear so bad. And then being able to get it for free after that, I was stoked.
Yeah. And I'm sure mom and dad, like it's an expensive sport. So they're working their tails off to support you. At some point you get some support from some OEMs.
Yeah. I'm not sure exactly when it came, but whenever I got on senior 50s, we got a deal with Cobra, and I got on the Cobra Elite team. So then the bikes were pretty much taken care of then. And it's basically been that since, except the 1 year we went on our own and bought gas gases. But that's been the level of support ever since I was on, since I was 6 years old, basically. So.
Yeah, the gas gas was just a couple years ago, I believe, right? And then Rockstar Husky must have made a deal because you were on Rockstar Husky in 22 and won a couple championships at Loretta's.
Yeah, so it was 20 the whole year of 2021. We went out on our own and bought some gas gas super minis and actually had a really good year, won a bunch of titles, and then we got a deal with. Basically like Orange Brigade, but on Husqvarna.
Yeah.
So it wasn't Rockstar necessarily. And then I won Loretta's both classes on the 125 last year. And after that, then we got a deal from Rockstar, and that brings us to today.
Yeah. So working with Husky, the support, and especially now that it's Rockstar Husky, the pressure level starts growing. It starts to become serious. Probably starting to feel like a job. Are you equipped for that? I know you have your parents. Do you have other people that you talk to about trying to separate the pressure and making sure it's still fun so you don't feel overwhelmed?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, this year's been pretty pressureless, I guess, especially with all the Supercross futures, I feel like, because I'm not an A rider or anything, so I didn't have the pressure to go in and, hey, you got to win, you got to do this. So it was kind of just get my feet wet, because I think I'm going to run those again next year. So this year was just to go out, get comfortable, and get your feet wet on some Supercross, and that actually ended up turning out really well, I guess.
Yeah, it did.
But and on the motocross side of things, I haven't ridden much motocross until recently on the bike, so. To come out and actually win the regional I was stoked with that. And now the pressure's on for the Loretta's, I guess, but the whole team's super chill and super cool about it. Never really feel too under pressure over there.
That's good, because that will come at some point and it changes things a lot. And I always, you know, I've been interviewing like Ryder D and Hayden since they were little bitty guys. And I've always asked that and asked the family that, how do you want to allow yourself to be a kid for until you just can't be anymore, and make sure it stays fun until it has to be a job. So yeah, I think that's a very important process. And I know that Daniel Blair, now that he's part of the Orange Brigade and the Husky and Gas Gas amateur stuff, he's big on that too. I know he takes things serious, but he's very family oriented and he's a pretty chill guy. So have you worked with Daniel much? Has he really helped you any, or is that still a new relationship?
I'd say it's pretty, I've actually got to work with him quite a bit and talk to him quite a bit. And I love Daniel. He's a good dude and he's really easygoing and honestly, it helps out a lot of tips here and there anytime I see him. And it's good to have him around. I haven't got to work with him too much, obviously, because I'm not part of that Orange Brigade team, so I don't go to him with bikes or anything. But anytime I see him at any of the amateur races, he's always giving me little nidbits here and there. But I wanted to touch on the fun side of it. It's nice where we're at right now. We get I live on a lake, so whenever I get home, we can go out on the boat and go surf and go hang out just to get your mind off of training for a little bit. So it keeps it fun, and it's not too much of a grind every single day. You get to come home and get away from it and then go back at it tomorrow.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. I think that's very important. And I want to go back to Daniel just for a minute. He's one of my buddies. Yep. So I want to know if it makes it more comfortable when you do visit with him because he's like the same size as you.
I think I might got him beat now.
Yeah, you might. He's a little bitty fella. I love making fun of a man when he was doing TV. He'd be standing on like a box, you know. And of course, and then he started working with Ricky, and they're like the same size, so it didn't need the box anymore. But no, DB's just absolutely fantastic people. So yeah, any advice you can get from him, man, take it. He's the best.
He's a good dude.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, he really is. So I was going to ask like what you do for fun, and you talked about, I think, wake surfing or just surfing in general. I saw something on your Instagram. Do you anything else like playing golf or video games or just any BMX?
I used to be really into video games. Actually last year, the past 2 years I haven't touched on it much this year, just getting more and more busy with the whole schedule and everything. But, I was really into MX Simulator last year. And actually did a bunch of the little professional races they have on there. And then now recently just doing some wake surfing on the boat, occasional ocean surfing. I haven't dabbed my feet into that too much, but I'd like to actually go out to California and hit some better waves because the waves here in Florida are pretty not it.
Yeah,
to
yeah.
be honest.
Yeah, I surfed when I was a kid, but I'm old now, so I haven't done it. But I know Kenny likes it. And yeah, there's some good stuff. Go to Huntington or, where else is out there? I guess Laguna is pretty good. But yeah, definitely get on the West Coast and hit some waves. That'd be cool.
Yeah, I'd like to come out and do that.
Yeah. Your training, are you at Baker's Factory?
I am.
Okay, that's what I thought. I kind of texted you earlier about working with Brownie. How is that working with Mike Brown? He's known as a very hard-nosed dude on the track, but he's a softy and like outside the track. So I wonder what it's like training with him.
Yeah. It's been good. I actually love Brownie. He's a good dude. And on the track, you know, he gives me all the tips and all the training I need, all the technique stuff we've been doing. And it's been working obviously with the whole program. And I love the whole vibe we got going on with everyone, with Jalik and Volan. Sometimes when everyone's in town, we'll all go out and eat and get some food and all just mess with each other all the time. So it's a pretty loose program outside of training, but we all get tightened up back on the bike.
I bet that is a fun group. I know Max fairly well, nice, funny kid, and Jalik's just always joking and laughing. So yeah, I bet you guys, you know, he kind of missed Styles when Styles left, but it sounds like there's a good group there now.
Yeah, I know Brownie misses Styles, yeah, for sure. And so we all do a little bit, I think, because he was part of the whole group too. So
sure,
but it's still been a good time.
How aware are you of Mike Brown's history? Because he's lived it, man. He's done a lot of different things on motorcycles.
Everything, literally everything. I always ask him, I'm like, did you ever do this? He's like, yeah.
Yep, yeah.
I'm like, dang, you raced every single type of racing there is to do.
It still does. Yeah, it's still
won everything.
Like, there's no doubt if he lined up next weekend at Thunder Valley, he could probably, he might top 10.
Honestly, I wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah, he's a beast. He's a beast. Yeah, I just need to get him to respond to my damn text so I can get him on. Like I said, we were supposed to do an interview last night. He said he was doing his regional yesterday too, right, at Gainesville. He said, when I get done, I'm going to call you or I'm going to text you. Nothing. Just dead.
50% of the time I call him and text him, he doesn't respond anyways. So.
That makes me feel better. Well, let's talk about Supercross futures. Yeah, you came in this year. A2 got a second, Arlington a second, Glendale a fourth, East Rutherford a fourth, and then you win Salt Lake City. Hell of a good record, man. I mean, obviously you got a little bit of help at Salt Lake City with the Bennick and Juju going down, but doesn't matter, man. You won. That's killer.
Oh, man. Definitely. I'm still speechless about that night in Salt Lake, but the whole series was wild for me, especially coming into A2. I was looking at the roster, seeing all the guys that could be there, and my expectations were coming in were, let's get a top 10, maybe. Like, I would be stoked with a top 5 even.
Yeah.
Because I got hurt in October, actually, right before Straight Rhythm, because I was going to do Straight Rhythm on 125, and then I got hurt and broke my hand and didn't get back on the bike till basically the beginning of December. So I had maybe a month and a half on the 250, and all that time was basically Supercross. And I know some of these guys have been riding it a lot longer, so I was just coming in hoping to dabble and maybe get a top 5, and then getting on the podium with a second, I was over the moon.
Yeah, that's amazing, man. Good for you. I love to see it. You seem like a really good kid. What did that program, the Supercross Futures program, surprise you with? What did you take away from it? It's kind of cool that you get to go experience the night program, the whole day program, right? And racing under the lights. It gives you a little bit of insight of what's to come. Talk about what that helps you with.
The biggest thing for me was even just walking out of the tunnel at A2 for that main event and looking up and seeing, I don't know, 50,000 people in the stands all watching you, and just thinking about how, you know, you've dreamed of racing this since you're a little kid, and it's finally here, and being able to get that opportunity just to race in front of so many people at one stadium and just cherish that moment. And I'm speechless about it. Honestly, it's such a cool opportunity, and I'm so happy that we got to put it together and actually come out with some good results.
Yeah, man, it's, again, fantastic to hear. What do you think your strong points are from the Supercross experience you have now, and what are your weak points? Usually it's whoops, but what are yours?
Definitely weak point is whoops. I remember it was Glendale. I was like, I got like fourth in qualifying, but we did a little a matchup like with some film, and I was like ahead, like first in qualifying all the way till that long whoop section at Glendale, and then I lost like a second and a half.
That's a lot.
I told myself, I was like, I'm just going home and I'm gonna hit whoops. Yeah. Like 100 times a day. I'm just hitting whoops over and over. And it's gotten better. It's gotten better, actually. And Salt Lake City was actually pretty good. I actually felt pretty comfortable there. But yeah, Glendale was rough. East Rutherford was a little better in the whoops, but that's definitely the weak points. But strong points are, the starts actually were pretty decent all year. I wasn't too mad at those, but other than whoops, I actually felt really comfortable on all the tracks.
With the whoops, is it technique or is it a little bit of mental, like almost like for me, I'd be scared, right? You have to commit, and that's very difficult, I assume.
Yeah, it's basically like seeing death in front of you, and the faster you go at it, the better it is. It doesn't make any sense.
Right. Yeah, I like that. I think that might be the quote for the title of this interview. That's great. Just go talk to Christian, man. He'll get you dialed.
I know. I see this guy hitting whoops every day before the Supercross season, and I'm like, how does this guy do it? He looks so steady and so perfect, and I'm like, I just try and do the same thing, and it just doesn't work.
Shift up and close your eyes. All right, a couple more things before I let you go. I was looking through your Instagram, and it reminded me that last year you were on the FIM Junior World Championship team for the USA and won that in Finland, right? What was that experience like?
Unreal, honestly. That whole experience was eye-opening for sure. That track that we raced over there was, I can confidently say, the most brutal track I've ever raced on in my life, because... And I was going over there thinking, I was like, oh, it's not going to be too gnarly, like, because 125s are the highest bike they have. And I was like, okay, so it's just 125s, 65s, and 85s. And I was like, oh, it shouldn't be too bad. But we did the qualifying day before, and I think I qualified like fifth or something. And the track actually wasn't too bad. And I came up, we woke up the next morning and I looked outside and I was like, they didn't touch the track at all. Like, it left it the exact same. And I was like, oh Lord, this is going to be rough. And I think I got fourth overall in the 125 class, but the team ended up winning for the whole USA overall. But I went like 7-4 in my motos. And I remember in the first moto coming off the track, and I was like, I don't even want to go back out there. I was just so, I was so tired and I was so done. And I was like, if I rode this track every day or just tracks as gnarly as this, like you wouldn't even like, people wouldn't be able to touch you.
Right. Like Hurley, that's, you're right. That's how those GP guys, man, they're good.
Unreal. I was astonished by that experience, honestly.
Was that your first time racing out of the country or have you done that before?
I did some MX Master Kids in France in like 2014 and 2016 maybe. So I did some racing overseas before that in France.
Yeah, some good experience. Okay, last couple questions. How are you as a tester? Do you feel the bike? If there's minor changes done, will you pick up on it? You know, if let's say your mechanic goes a couple clicks in or changes engine mounts, do you feel stuff like that?
I would say it's getting better.
Okay.
I used to, like on an 85, I would literally ride around with a flat tire. It used to be so bad. You could put a whole different set of suspension on and they would ask me, do you feel anything? I'm like, oh, I didn't even know. And that's how it used to be, but it's getting better now. Now we're starting to get somewhere where I can feel some stuff and actually make some changes to help the team out.
That's good. Yeah, you'll need that as your career moves on. But yeah, I'm with you. I don't feel crap. I just ride the bike. Yep. So last one, or actually two more. Your plans for the rest of the season, you talked about Loretta's. Are you staying B-class or you move into A?
So it's B-class until Loretta's at least, and the combines at Red Bud and Ironman. Mm-hmm. And I think we have a deal. If I win the combine at Red Bud, then maybe after Loretta's, go do one of the amateur days, get my pro points, and maybe race one of the last pro rounds just to dabble in there a little bit. And then Supercross Futures next year, mm-hmm. I think again, and maybe depending on what the team is, maybe go pro for outdoors, maybe stick around again. Haven't really made up the mind.
Yeah, it's still kind of up in the air depending on results. That's pretty common. Who's your biggest competition?
It's tough. I mean, both the Cowie guys this year are really the biggest competition in the 250B class this year with Christian and Drew, but I've gotten pretty lucky this year. Sometimes the B classes are super stacked, but we've only got about four or five fast guys, so it's not too deep this year.
Okay. And the last question to wrap this thing up, do you listen to any motocross podcasts?
I've listened to maybe one or two of like the pulp yep. shows, but I don't listen to anything really. Haven't listened to anything in probably 2 years, to be honest.
All right. Well, just so you know, the Moto X Pod show had you on first. So when you go pro and Steve Mathis asks you to come on the show, you're our guy. We got you first. Okay.
All right.
Steve's good people. I used to work for him, but yeah, he doesn't like the amateurs all that much, but yeah, we want to support you guys and I look forward to seeing your career progress, man. It's been great talking to you.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Casey, good luck. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
All right. See you.